he's funny. But it's okay. So I take it Robert is not filming this side. So nice, lovely weather today. Let's have a little meditation to celebrate the rain. In some countries, they celebrate the rain, right? In other countries, they're not so happy when it rains, depending on many other reasons. Let's have a little meditation. I allow the body and the mind to settle down. Letting go of all thoughts of the past, apprehensions of the future. I turn my attention inwards, going deep within to the center of my existence, I experience my entire existence converging, concentrating. Concentrating into a point in the center of the brain. A speck of consciousness. The center of all life. The soul, the spirit, my original and eternal identity. Just a speck of consciousness. Separate from this body. Separate from the world of this body. Deep, silent awareness. I experience as though this physical world and this physical body has disappeared from my awareness. All that remains is the soul. Just a speck of consciousness. And I see myself in a world of light beyond the limits of matter, beyond the limits of space and time. And I find myself in the presence of the Supreme.
resting in the light of God. Bathing in the shower of light. Coming from this infinite source. I rest in deep silence. Absorbing this light. This experience of bliss. Contentment, fullness, nothing to do, nowhere to go, experiencing the stage beyond desire. Just a speck of consciousness. In the presence of God, holding on to the silence, I allow myself. Gently return back to this world of the physical, back to this room, back to this body, this costume of mine, and I take my place once again in the center of the brain. Spreading the light of life, the light of consciousness, looking out through the windows of these eyes, listening through these ears, silent and peaceful.
So, we begin today's talk. We're supposed to speak about being positive and walking the talk. But what is this walking the talk? People say, practice what you preach. What about people who don't preach? they don't have to practice anything, right? If I preach, I have to practice. If I don't preach, no need for practice. What do you think? Walking the talk. One is what we talk with our mouth, what we talk, what we preach, what we say. The other is the talk that happens inside us. The talk of the heart. The talk of the soul. Do we know what that talk is? Do we pay attention to what our heart is telling us? What is this heart anyway? What is the meaning of heart? Some, whatever we feel.
Some will call it consciousness.
Consciousness. Mm-hmm. Yes. Some will call it consciousness. What aspect of consciousness
is our heart.
The conscience.
The conscience. And that is what we will speak about today. Heart, not as in terms of what we desire. Many times we say, I would like to do what I feel. But what I feel, is it in alignment with my conscience? Or what I feel, is it more a question of desire, my egocentric desires? How do we discern between egocentric desires and what our heart is telling us? So spiritually, when we speak about the heart, we're speaking about the conscience. So when we say walking the talk today, what we will speak about is not about practicing what you preach, but about practicing what you feel. At the deepest level of feeling, at the deepest possible level of experience, what is it that I feel? And am I practicing that? We will speak about that. This month, we have been trying to look at the connection between the environment and consciousness, different aspects of consciousness. And we speak about consciousness and climate change. How does a certain kind of consciousness create more harm to the environment, and how transforming consciousness can also transform our environment? That's a very ambitious thing. And the theme then is sharing values for sharing Gokunegan. Sharing Gokunegan apparently is the topic of the environment year, whatever it is called, in 2014. Gokunegan, what is it? Climate capital, or whatever it is for this year. Sharing values. So what is the importance of sharing values when we look at our behavior towards the environment? After all, it is our behavior, it is our actions that have created all these disturbances that we experience in the environment. Human actions. In the first talk that we had, we were speaking about greed. How human greed emerges from an experience of inner insecurity and emptiness. We're trying to fill it up. We're trying to fill it up with more and more and more. And we try and we exploit nature to have more and more and more. And trying to fill up that inner emptiness, I feel. That emptiness will never fill up that way. It's like a bucket without a bottom. Things just go in and more and more and more. It's like an unending process that doesn't help. It creates lots of problems for us and our environment. We've spoken about that. We also spoke about how our limited identity, when our identity becomes limited to gender, culture, ethnicity, religion, nation, when our identity becomes limited to that, it creates insecurity. Because these things cannot always be protected. And there are differences that we feel threatened by. It creates insecurity, creates emptiness, then I want to fill it up. And we spoke about one process of moving outside this spin of emptiness, generating greed, generating exploitation of the environment, generating further problems, of moving into the unlimited. If we can move our identity from the limited into the unlimited, then we have the possibility of feeling that inner security and fullness, which will help us in conquering greed. Otherwise, we can sit and talk about it all the time. But if I don't have the inner deep experience of security and fullness, I won't be able to conquer greed. Again and again, I will become the victim of greed. In the second talk, we spoke about respecting life, the same process of expanding our identification. Identify with the self, identify with my family, my country, my culture, my nation, my language, my religion, whatever it is, my job, limits. Expanding beyond that. Identifying with the human race, but that's not enough. Identifying with nature, identifying with animals, all aspects of this world, identifying with the whole universe, going more and more into the unlimited. So respect for life, but not just human life. Respect for all forms of life. We expand our identification to all forms of life. Then we create a more sustainable world. We spoke of the problems with raising animals for meat in the previous session. We know that. Objectively, we have the data now. And yet it is so difficult for people to change.
Because the inner experience of fullness that is required for this change is not there. I need that to move. Today we will speak about another process of overcoming this inner emptiness that generates greed and that generates all the behaviors that are problematic for the environment. And that is about being positive and walking the talk as in practicing what I feel, not practicing what I preach. I don't even have to preach anything, but I have to practice what I feel. And so being positive. Positivity is a big thing. We all want to be positive, right? We all want to be positive. Science has demonstrated to us now, especially psychological science has demonstrated to us the importance of positivity in bringing about transformation. One example, one very simple example, we have this whole discipline of positive psychology, right, nowadays. One simple example is when you're looking at therapy for people who are going through depression, they've experimented with controlled experiments of giving them positive strategies, using positive strategies in therapy and seeing the impact on the recovery from depression. One simple experiment was on gratitude, using gratitude as a way of overcoming depression. How do you do that? Very simple. There are different groups of people. Again, you have the experimental and control groups format of experimentation. And people were given different ways of practicing gratitude. Now, these are all depressed patients. They were all given different ways of practicing gratitude. For example, writing in their journal every day before going to sleep, three things or five things they are grateful for, doing it for a week. Writing a letter to someone that you are very grateful towards, who's done something very nice for you in your life, and going and giving this letter or reading this letter to them. Different forms of gratitude treatments. And they found a higher rate of recovery through these treatments than focusing on trying to find out all the deep traumatic experiences. That's the other focus of therapy sometimes, right? Both may be important, but when the focus is on this, we have seen that positive interventions can be very, very beneficial. Positive interventions grounded in reality, not in fantasy. Because sometimes you can be positive by denying reality. That kind of positivity doesn't work. That we know very well. Positivity that is fully grounded in reality does not mean we deny the negative aspects of reality. We are aware, but the focus is on positivity. When this kind of positivity is practiced, it has great benefit. We know that. So then the question is, we understand we all want to be positive, right? We want to work with positivity in spirituality, at least, when you're speaking about climate change, we say be positive. Take a determined thought that you will stop negativity and be positive. And with that positivity, you transform yourself. With that positivity, you can also transform the world. Right? We all try to do that. Do we always succeed? We want to be positive. We understand the significance of being positive. We recognize the importance of being positive. And yet, what happens? Why are we unable to maintain and sustain a positive focus in our lives? Why does that happen? The impact of positive thinking is beyond just feeling good. In fact, there have been some research around the impact of thoughts on matter. Many of you may be aware of it. There's some controversy around the research. Have you heard of intentional chocolate? Anyone's heard of intentional chocolate? No? Oh, you should look it up. It's very interesting stuff. Intentional chocolate. There's a researcher. He works at the Institute of Noetic Sciences. I don't know if you're aware of that. There is a place called Institute of Noetic Sciences in California. They work with paranormal phenomena, parapsychology, paranormal phenomena, how the mind can control matter, various things like that, clairvoyance, psychokinesis, things like that. And Dean Radin, he's one of the researchers, I think he's a lead researcher there. He did work on chocolate. Now, how did he work on chocolate? The chocolate, the same kind, very nice, wonderful, dark chocolate, same quality of chocolate, was assigned to different treatment conditions. I think there were about four treatment conditions. In one treatment condition, the chocolate was not introduced to anything. The chocolate was just given to people to eat. In the other three treatment conditions, the chocolate was introduced to different kinds of environmental, you know, situation. So things like what? For example, in one condition, the chocolate is exposed to chanting. The Buddhist monks sitting, and the chocolate is there, and they have a few hours of chanting. Those, you know, very soothing, calming chanting that you have in Buddhist meditation. That was one. Another intervention was the chocolate is in the same room where people are praying for a long time. Things like that. And they're wishing. They're wishing that the people who have these chocolates should feel good, should have an experience of energy and vitality and well-being. They're praying like that. They're spreading these positive vibrations where the chocolate is. Now, this looks cookie, right? It doesn't really make any difference. And then, these chocolates were given to these different groups of people, right? The chocolate that has been treated by all these good vibrations and wishes and all that, and then the other group, that the chocolate has not been treated with anything. Given to people, and then they actually measured how energetic they were feeling and what was their experience of well-being before and after the treatments. Interestingly, the groups that were given this chocolate treated with good intentions reported 67% higher experience of well-being than the group that was not given this chocolate, that had the other kind of chocolate. And this study was published in a journal called Explore. It's an Elsevier journal, a pretty well-recognized journal. Of course, the study has been criticized and that people could not replicate the results, and so we don't know exactly if it can be replicated, but it's interesting to look at something like that. There is another Japanese researcher who's worked with water. You might have known Masaru Emoto, I think his name is, of the change in the water crystals when they are treated to vibrations of prayer and chanting and meditation. Again, controversial research. I would love to say that's wonderful, that's proven, it's established, but the reality is it is not established. But there have been some researchers experimenting with things like that. The problem is, it's difficult to replicate these studies all the time. Some people have challenged them. This is a person who was very skeptical about these things. I forget his name. He used to be a magician. He's given a $1 million challenge. He said, you repeat the same experiment under strict control conditions, and if you get the same results, then I'm willing to give you $1 million. No one has taken that challenge yet. I wonder why. But that's a different story. So we don't know, but it's interesting. Does the mind have influence on matter in that way? If it does, it's amazing. It's a difficult thing to measure, perhaps. But it's also interesting to see that for a long time, for centuries, we have always had these spiritual practices in various religions, right? Before eating food, you say your prayers, you meditate, you remember God, you try and fill that food with good vibrations, and then you eat. In some traditions, in some cultures, they have the tradition of offering food to God before eating it. They, you know, whatever they cook, they place it in front of God, and do some prayers and all, or they meditate, and then they eat. So, is there some logic behind such things? It's interesting to explore. Spirituality, at least many spiritual schools will say yes. There is an impact of the mind on matter, on also on food, the kind of thoughts we fill in that environment in which this food is being prepared. But anyway, apart from that, whether the mind has that kind of an influence on matter or not, many people say yes, some people and many others would say we don't know, or it doesn't really have, it's not very, very clear. There is some evidence saying it does have some influence. But the inner experience of being positive that we all recognize, that's a good experience, right? We feel good. Psychologically, we know very clearly the impact is pretty significant of being positive. So, we all want to be positive. Then the question is, what stops us from being positive? We try to be positive. What stops us from being positive? What do you think? Yes?
Our brains.
Our brains. Blame the brain.
Our limited beliefs.
Sorry?
Our limited beliefs.
Our limited beliefs. What else? Could there be other aspects to it? Limited beliefs, we've spoken about that already, of course. Limitations to our identity, limitations of our beliefs. Yes?
Old security patterns.
Old patterns. Mm. And what happens when we give in to these old patterns? And why should giving in to these old patterns stop us from feeling positive? This.
Because the negativity that we feel, it weighs a lot higher. We focus so much time on the negativity that we feel that we forget the positivity sometimes because it's overshadowed by negativity.
Well, what's the way out then? Be positive.
It is to stop yourself, to take a time out when you become aware that now you're caught up in this negativity.
Mm.
But it requires some practice.
Of course, it's not that easy. Yeah? You're
saying something? I think many times it's due to the expectations that we think we need to have, getting disappointed that they don't live up to, and they don't create the happiness that we expect them to. So it's disappointment that leads to...
Disappointment coming from our desire or expectations. That also stops us from being positive. We can speak about a lot of things here. And whatever you have said is, of course, related to the experience of not being able to maintain positivity. Today, we will try and connect it to something pretty deep, which is perhaps behind many of the things that you're speaking about already. Expectations that we have that are not fulfilled. And then you speak about also these limitations we create in ourselves. We will speak of something called integrity. What do you understand by integrity?
Being true to yourself.
Being true to the self. Right? Being true to the self. And that is where we speak about listening to our heart. Practicing what we feel. Not practicing what we preach, but we are speaking here about practicing. What we feel, and by feel, we are speaking here about living our life in alignment with our conscience. In other words, we say, heart. If we can maintain this integrity, and if we live our life according to this integrity, the spiritual proposition is that will facilitate the experience of positivity. And if I'm unable to experience positivity in my life, even though I have made many plans, I keep slipping back again and again and again into the experience of a negative spiral, then I need to sit down and ask myself, am I leading a life of integrity? Because if I am leading a life of integrity, if I am really and truly listening to my heart, following the conscience, I should be able to take anything. And by anything, I mean anything. Even physical pain will not lead to suffering. Because there is a very deep strength coming from the experience of listening to your heart. The problem is many a times, we are unable to differentiate between the heart, as in the conscience, and what we sometimes call our heart, our desires. What I want. I feel like going for a vacation. I'm following my heart. I feel I should go for this job. I'm following my heart. Right? I feel the love from this relationship has gone out. I'm following my heart. Is that following the heart? Or is that actually going against the heart? And if we go against the heart, and this becomes very deep, if we go against the heart, if this conscience, which is the core of our being, if we take a step against it, what will be the experience? The very deepest core aspect of my existence, my heart, my conscience, my understanding of what is right and what is wrong, not my cultural understanding of what is right and what is wrong, that's different. That's the ego. But the heart, what do we create? Pain. And we create perhaps one of the very deep psychological emotions, guilt. We have the experience of pain. We have the experience of guilt. We don't like this experience of pain and guilt. Because of being unable to discern, because of being unable to recognize the difference between my heart and my desires, I can sometimes go against my heart to pursue my desires. In the process and consequence, I end up creating pain and I end up creating guilt. And what is the sign that there is pain and guilt inside? What is the sign? How do we recognize that? Sometimes it's obvious. We think of some experiences, something we have done in the past. We feel guilty. We want to get over that. Sometimes it's pretty clear in our mind. Other times it's not so clear. But how do I recognize? And this recognition is very, very important if I want to transform. How do I recognize that there is some pain and guilt inside? Anyone? Yes?
Maybe insecurity and confusion.
Yes. There is, of course, the experience of insecurity and confusion. And what else?
Negativity.
Yeah.
Negativity. Yes.
Restlessness.
Restlessness. And many a times this negativity, confusion, this restlessness can result in a desire. And because it's not comfortable, it results in a desire to escape. Escape from this pain and guilt. And one of the ways in which we escape is through indulgence. Typically, indulgence in pleasure. Sometimes, indulgence in pain. Sometimes, indulgence in pleasure. Sometimes, indulgence in pain. And these are extreme responses that many a times we have, we experience in the world. People carrying this pain and guilt inside, and by the way, we all have some element of that, right? It's the question of understanding that. I indulge, and when I indulge, I am sort of going against, and in many ways, I am deepening this experience. Let me give you an example of a very extreme way of an escape from this pain and guilt we feel inside. We indulge, we deepen, we reduce our experience of self-respect. This can lead to an experience of deep hatred for the self. And because I hate myself, I don't consider myself worthy enough to follow my conscience. You see the trap there? Because I don't consider myself worthy, since I am not worthy anyway, why bother following values and stuff like that? I remember many years ago, I was parents of a child, they came and they told me that our child is indulging in a lot of antisocial activity in school, breaking things, being violent towards other students, right? And they came and they told me, oh, how do we deal with this person? He has been punished. The school has tried many things. The school has tried a positive approach where they've tried to get the child to meet a counselor and speak to the counselor. The school has tried punishment. The school has tried everything. And now they are considering removing the child from the school because he is just not transforming. And we know this experience, this antisocial behavior, sometimes it is referred to as psychopathy. You know, psychopaths, supposedly a personality disorder in many places, but not necessarily. Some people call it sociopathy to emphasize the importance of the environment in shaping this kind of behavior. Anyway, this person is indulging in these kind of behaviors. Nothing is helping. You've tried love, you've tried punishment, you've tried everything. Nothing seems to be working. This young kid, he was what? I think he was around 14, 13, 14 at that time. And then he comes. He doesn't want to come, obviously, because he's just in that world. And then something very, you know, we spoke and he didn't want to speak. And he just thought he was wasting his time. And he would rather be doing something else. But after some time, in one session, he said something very, very deep. And probably that was the only time I felt emotion in him. He sort of burst out one day during a conversation and he said, you know, my parents, they've always criticized me. They've never thought I was good enough for anything. So why should I be good enough? Why should I be good? What's the point in being good? And people always have told me that I'm not so good. What's the point in being good? Why should I be good? A lot of anger inside, a lot of pain inside has been pushed away, emerging in the experience of aggression. And it's very difficult to deal with this extreme reaction to pain and perhaps also to guilt. Antisocial psychopathy, it's very, very difficult to treat. In fact, many people say it's almost impossible to treat. Because they are totally, and the typical symptoms of people who are diagnosed as psychopathic would be that there is an absence of remorse, they feel no remorse. And therefore any punishment, and they have very high level of tolerance of pain. They're not afraid of pain, they can take any pain. And so you have any kind of punishment, it doesn't work on them. Right? In fact, some of them desire pain. Extreme cases. The understanding is then that the experience of pain and perhaps the experience of some guilt has become so deep, it is so painful, it is completely shut off. It is so deeply shut off, you can't touch it. And to deny that there is this experience of pain, the escape is in inflicting pain on others. You inflict pain on others, in a way you're denying that there is pain within the self. It is the hatred for the self. And so, one form of indulgence is, for example, there is you just indulge in pleasure. All sorts of pleasure. Food, watch a movie, something uncomfortable inside, escape, see what is happening around you, indulge yourself in the world around you, speak to some people, go out, party, watch a movie, have some nice food, escape in that way. And the other indulgence is, you can see, a repetition of the action that actually led to the initial pain and guilt. You're sort of repeating that, going against the conscience again and again and deepening that pain and guilt. And when that becomes really deep, it is like people become incapable of feeling anything. And many a times the extreme reactions, of course, here it is. One is you have this experience, this reactions of psychopathy, inflicting pain and difficulty on others. And the question is, do we have any elements of psychopathy within us? Do we sometimes take pleasure by making life difficult for others? Wouldn't that be some trace of psychopathy within us? Do we take pleasure in the suffering of someone else? Do we take pleasure in putting others down? Do we take pleasure in looking at the weaknesses of others? From my perspective, these are all signs of something similar to psychopathy. And which means basically there is a deep pain inside, there is some suffering inside that I am trying to avoid looking at by looking at something wrong in others and maybe wishing something evil to others, and in extreme cases, causing evil to others. You have extreme behaviors like sadism, right? Causing injury, taking pleasure by causing some sort of pain and suffering to others. You also have another experience, the opposite of that, what is referred to many a times as masochism. Experiencing pleasure through inflicting pain on the self. How do we understand these phenomena? One is the extreme, self-mutilation, taking pleasure by letting others punish us, beat us. That is the extreme form of masochism. But then there are subtler forms of masochism. We all have certain patterns that are not good for us. We know that. We know very, very clearly this is not good for us. It could be something simple as eating too much sugar. We know this is not good for us, and yet we keep repeating that pattern again and again and again, and causing injury to the self. Why do we give in to something like that again and again? What do you think? Yes? Yeah?
It's safe to do what you are used to do. It's safer than it's even if it's very if unhealthy for you.
Mm.
You do what you are used to do.
Mm. It gives us some, but again, the thing is, why are we so used to it? Because obviously, it has given us some reward. You were saying something.
It takes an awareness to understand what you're actually going through.
And it diverts our awareness from something else that is painful. And that is what we need to understand. If I am engaging in a self-destructive pattern again and again and again, that is diverting, that is helping me, or at least I believe that is helping me in diverting my attention from something else that is painful inside. And I repeat it again and again. But the problem is, and then I'm in that vicious cycle. I repeat it, I go against the conscious again, I deepen the pain and guilt. And if in very extreme situations it becomes so serious that I am incapable of feeling anything, I want to feel something, even pain is okay, but I want to feel it. And so you have masochism. Anything, I want to feel something. Because the problem with feeling is, if I block away negative feelings, I also block away positive feelings. They're very deeply connected. They're very, very deeply connected. If there is something I'm feeling inside that is negative and I want to push it away, I also push away the opposite. And then I'm unable to feel anything, I feel empty. I want to feel something. Anything is okay. Pain is also okay. But I want to feel something. That's the extreme reaction. Does it make sense? You could say, at not such an extreme level, we have these patterns playing in our own lives. And therefore, to transform, when we speak about being positive, meaning we have to get in touch with our heart, meaning we have to live according to our heart, which means we also have to recognize, we have to identify. We have to identify very, very clearly. So here we speak about this aspect of identification, and then we also speak about a process of integration. And these two become extremely important practices. What do we mean by that? When we speak about identification, firstly, it's the identification of what is this heart that I speak about as heart. So, identification of the conscience. When is it that my conscience is actually working and how do I identify that? Also, the identification of these processes happening inside me. Unless and until I identify, it is very difficult to transform. Unless and until I learn to identify with the conscience that I have suppressed for a very long time, it is very difficult to bring about a transformation. But identification is not enough. We also need integration. And when we have integration, we can live according to the conscience, which is integrity. You know the word integrity, it comes from integer. What does integer mean?
Unit
that is full and complete. A unit. Integer. Integrity, in other words, would actually mean that experience of being complete as one whole unit. But integrity requires integration. And integration requires identification. What do we mean by this? Say, for example, we take one value. Non-violence. Does it appeal to all of you? Does anyone here to whom the value does not appeal? Non-violence. Oh, there could be, right? Anyone? No, so it appeals to all of you. Hopefully. Okay? It's a value. Non-violence. It appeals to us. We identify with figures who have stood for non-violence, like Nelson Mandela, like Gandhi, like Jesus. Various figures in history many of us identify with because they stand for something that we value. Say, for example, non-violence and love. The question is, am I practicing non-violence in my life? And then when we speak about non-violence, we are speaking about the level of thoughts, level of feelings, and most importantly, non-violence towards the self. If I'm engaging in activities and behaviors that are damaging to the self, am I being non-violent towards the self? If I'm eating food that is, I know, harmful to me, am I being non-violent towards the self? If I'm sleeping too much when I know I should be up and applying for jobs, when I don't have a job, am I being non-violent towards myself or am I being violent towards the self? And if I'm being violent towards the self, where is this violence coming from? So how do I, when I value non-violence, I'm not practicing non-violence, I'm going against my conscience, deepening my own guilt, and then this whole process, I want to escape, I want to indulge in something to make myself feel good, and therefore deepening the guilt and the pain, and then getting myself trapped in this vicious cycle. How do I get out? Good question. But we'll speak actually today about a very simple tool that you can start using. And I would encourage you to use this for the next 1 week before we meet again. Tried and tested tool. But let me hear from you. How would you work on that? Say, let's take one value here, non-violence. How do I start living in accordance with that value?
One thing, be aware of, like, the movies you see and the films, the things that the books you read and all these things have an impact on that as well.
Okay. One way. So stop seeing movies and stop reading books that have any violence in them. Is that enough?
No.
I think one word you said was aware.
Awareness. Yeah. Awareness. You could say awareness, identification of, yes, were you saying something?
Absolutely.
Yes, and what else? Yes?
So it has to be internal.
How? And what will we do?
You're going to ask.
Okay. Let's go back to some research in psychology. Right? Some very interesting research in psychology tells us actually now about the processes of integration. Very, very interesting stuff. And the research has been done, for example, around many things, but one I would tell you is about cultural values. For example, the values of, say, individualism or collectivism, right? To what extent do people follow something because of compulsion? For example, you also have the group pressure. This group pressure could come from your peer group, it could come from the cultural reference group, it could come from many things that makes people behave in the way that they behave. Yeah? And then people can do the same thing, not because of the pressure upon them, but because they want to do it. So for example, young people taking care of their parents who are not well. Now, psychologically, there could be many motives for taking care of their parents who are not well. One could be coming from an expectation of the cultural group. There is a sense of compulsion. I have to do it. I should do it. And that's because, you know, that's the expectation. Right? And then we see psychologically when people do that behavior out of group pressure, there is a sense of compulsion and there is a relief from when you engage in the behavior, there is a feeling of relief. Not so much a sense of satisfaction, but more a sense of relief that now the expectations have been fulfilled. And then the other pattern is doing it from the heart, doing it from this level where there is no sense of relief after the behavior has been performed. Do you follow that? The difference between doing it out of compulsion and doing it out of a sense of the heart where that value of taking care of someone has become deeply integrated into the sense of self. So how do we integrate things deep within into the sense of self? There is a very clear process to that. And sometimes we end up following things which are in direct opposition to our heart. I'll give you my own personal life experience. I was sharing it with some people the other day. I was born and brought up in a Muslim family, and a pretty traditional Muslim family. One of the rituals that they have in Islam is animal sacrifice. At a particular time in the year, there is animal sacrifice. And the men of the house are supposed to sacrifice the animal. Right? I was brought up in that. At the age of, I think what, it was around 7, people in my family felt they should make me a man. And one way that they can make me a man is let me sacrifice an animal. Okay? Now, many people eat animals. That's a different story. When you're actually sacrificing an animal, that's a different story. No, people feed. Though many people would say, well, that's hypocrisy. If you can eat, that animal has been killed by someone else, right? You could have been the one, but what difference does it make anyway? That's another debate. I felt a resistance. I remember that day very clearly. I felt a resistance. I didn't want to do that. Deep in my heart. But all around me, everybody who wants me to be a man believes that that's the way to be a man. I have to be strong and tough and sacrifice the animal. I did it. I was 7. I felt quite bad. I felt terrible. And then I forgot that I felt terrible. That memory disappeared. I had even forgotten that I had ever done that. Forgotten. For many, many years, I never thought about it. And after many years, when I was an adult, and I started practicing meditation, as I became a vegetarian, I started leading a different life. I remember one day, I was sitting in meditation, deep silence. Suddenly, that memory came in front of me. And along with that memory was an experience of such deep pain. Such deep pain and suffering. It was as though not the animal but I was suffering. Many a times we are even unable to identify the conscience, the heart. Or we are unable to follow the heart because we give in to things like the pressure around us. So people would say to me, well, you were only a child, you didn't know better. No, I think I was still responsible. I could have thrown a temper tantrum. I could have done something. I went along, and I went along because I wanted the approval of the people around me. And so in that process, I inflicted pain upon another living being. But see, I'm not separate from that living being. I'm a part of the universe. If that living being has experienced pain, I've experienced that pain. I've just shut it off. And maybe that experience contributed to my obsession with eating meat. For a long time I had that obsession. I'm repeating an action, maybe, to forget something else that is closely connected to that action. Because that reminds me of pain. And at some point in my life, that emerges, comes flooding out. Many times we don't know these values that are very, very deeply entrenched in the human soul. We are unable to recognize them. And because we are unable to recognize them, we are unable to work with them. Because we are unable to work with them, they don't become integrated within ourselves. And we are unable to practice that. Because we don't even know that that is important to practice. At one level we know, but we are pushed away because the associated memories are too painful. So one way is to take a value, say non-violence. And then a simple exercise would be, you sit down in the night before going to sleep. Two things that you can do. You can practice with this. And I would recommend you practice with the value of non-violence, because we are speaking so much about the environment, causing harm to the environment, causing harm to the self, associated things. Take up the value of non-violence. If you have identified that that is a value that is important to you. If you haven't, then it's better you work with something else that you believe is important for you. And then for 20 minutes, 15 to 20 minutes, don't think about that. Just go into deep silence. This practice of yoga that we have. Deep silence, this is the practice that we have. And here we are speaking about not just empty silence, we are speaking about the loving silence that we experience in the presence of God. And this is the practice of Raja Yoga. Going into the experience of being a soul, placing yourself in the presence of God. You feel that security and love in that experience. For 15-20 minutes, focus only on that. But after that, for the next 10 minutes, you can have the practice of active contemplation on this particular value. Say, for example, you have taken the value of non-violence. Active contemplation, what does that mean? Why is this value important to me? Write down why it is important to you. What is the meaning of this value? What does it mean to be non-violent? Write down what it means to be non-violent. Towards the self, towards others, towards nature, towards the world around, in all its forms. What does it mean to be non-violent? Write it down. Why is it important? Write it down. Why should you practice it? Write it down. What does it mean to be non-violent in your thoughts, in your words, in your actions? Write it down. 10 minutes to the exercise. Contemplation. Next day, repeat it. You will think, well, I've already written that yesterday. No, repeat it. Third day, 2 days, it's boring. Repeating this, repeat it. You will discover something very new. Fourth day, repeat it. Fifth day, repeat it. Do it for a week. Every day. 20 minutes practice of yoga. Going into the experience of being a soul in the presence of God. Two beings of light in deep silence. And in that time, don't think about anything. The other 10 minutes, practice with that value. Don't practice, write it down. Bring it again and again in your mind. With time, this bringing it again and again and again into the mind and reflecting on how it is related to your life, how it is related to who you are, which we may have pushed away, reflecting on that, bringing it again into our awareness, into our feeling, will slowly move us towards integration. Integration means the value is then becoming synthesized with our inner self. And the more we do it, the deeper the value. This balance of silence and contemplation. Silence and contemplation. Silence and contemplation. The value becomes deeper. We are able then to experience it more in our life. Does it look like a reasonable exercise? You can take up any value. You know, in my own life, I have seen many a times, you start a spiritual life, you hear about many things. Oh, you have to be peaceful, you have to be loving, you have to be pure, you have to follow this and you have to follow that. Unless and until I have done the work of having, in Raj Yoga, we call it having a heart-to-heart conversation with the self. You're conversing with your heart, you're conversing with your conscience, you're conversing with your values. And this cultivating this ability to have this heart-to-heart conversation with the self deepens the experience of those values of the heart. And then we find these coming naturally into our lives. Otherwise, it's a force. I have to force myself to be non-violent. It doesn't last for too long. For a few days I'll be very non-violent, and then I'll probably rebound to much more violence than I was doing before, because it hasn't become integrated into my sense of self. So identification, integration, together, I have run out of place, but together we would call it the power of realization. Bringing something into reality. I need to identify the reality and then integrate that reality within myself. Bring it into me again and again through active contemplation and balancing it with that silence. This is the power of realization. When we work at that level very, very deeply, we get the power then to practice what we feel. We are practicing what we feel. We live a life of integrity. And then we have a lot of strength. We can be positive. It doesn't matter what kind of obstacles come in front of us. We can be positive because from deep inside I have strengthened myself. Otherwise, as long as things are fine, we'll be positive. When faced with difficulties, difficult circumstances, difficulties in relationships, natural disaster, financial bankruptcy, whatever it is, loss of job, we break down. And the very sign that we break down when we face difficulties is that I haven't worked at that level, the deep level of connecting with my heart. If I do, I should have the strength to deal with that quite easily. And when we work with that space of integrity, we can be positive. This is one very important way of feeling that fullness. And then, of course, greed doesn't come into the picture so much, because I'm working from this deep inner space of the heart, which makes me feel full. If I'm leading a life of integrity, I will feel full. I won't have so many desires. I won't need to escape from reality, because my reality is my inner conscience, which I'm aware of and which I'm living. Anything you would like to ask? Deep work, right? But, I mean, you know, if you want to transform the self, people want to transform the world without transforming the self. First of all, that's tough. Yes?
It all starts with your understanding that you're disconnected.
Yes.
A lot of us start to believe we don't see the patterns. No. We don't understand the disconnect.
Yeah.
On any level.
Yes. But you know, there's a very simple way of recognizing this. Simple way of recognizing this. I remember a friend of mine had once said, he started practicing meditation and he used to be a very happy person, you know, very happy, positive. Very positive, always happy and cheerful and laughing and all that. He had some experiences in the middle that sort of shook him up pretty badly. And then he sat and he was telling me his experience. He said, then I started recognizing that earlier my happiness, my so-called happiness, was actually suffering. It was a pretense that I was not aware of. I was escaping from a reality that was quite sad. And he said later on he could recognize that. When did he recognize that? He would be sitting in his home doing nothing. And then suddenly he would feel, oh, I should do something. And then he switches on the television and he's watching the television for some time. And he asks himself, why did I switch on the television just now? What happened before? What was that spark that made me switch on the television and surf through the channels? And he started identifying that emptiness, that call of the soul, that inner anxiety emerges, and I block it off by engaging myself with some activity. And he said, all this happiness outside, going out and, you know, meeting all these people and all these friends, was basically an escape from that reality I didn't want to face. And then sitting and facing that reality. Now people say, oh, that's very painful, you know, and upsetting. No, it's not really that. If we work in this particular way, by experiencing this loving presence of God, that reality is not really painful. We get the strength to actually look at it from a distance, because we feel that deep security, and then we work with integration. Over a period of time, we accumulate strength and we accumulate fullness. So, identifying, but also practicing the practice of integrating. So, it's not enough to identify. Yes?
Do you think that it's possible for other kinds of people that doesn't meditate?
Mm-hmm.
So,
Oh, that's a very difficult question to me, because I practice meditation and I believe in it so much, I'm tempted to say, no, it's not possible. But I honestly don't know. What is meditation? Are people aware and are they integrating? If they are engaged in this process of integration, in some way they are meditating. I would say that. And I would leave it at that. Yes. It was an interesting process. Initially, this whole process of I was not integrating the value within myself. So initially, I recognized the importance of it. I could identify that. Someone told me first. I was pretty skeptical. Then I sort of, looked at it, explored it, understood it, and I sort of identified it. Yeah, okay, this is something I should do. Then I would try it for a few days, and then I wouldn't be able to maintain that, and then for a few days, and I wouldn't be able to maintain that. It just went on and on like that for a few months. I think about 6 months. Then after that, I recognized there was a very deep experience that I had at that point, some sort of a realization that if it is really important, then I need to bring about the change. And then I started working on this process of integration. Sitting every day, this is what I basically did, sitting every day in the night and telling myself, why is it important for me? Why do I want to do it? Am I doing it just because people say it should be done and it's important? Do I feel it deep inside? And if I don't feel it, why is it that I'm not able to feel it? I went into that experience. I remember when I started that process, since that day, I've never gone back. Never, not even one day. But it took me some time to get there. So, but then after that, that's it. Then I never went back. And it was very easy after that. It was very, very easy after that. Because it just became so clear and it became an experience within me that this is something I need to do, I want to do. Came from the heart. So that's how it went. With many other things, with many other practices, it's been the same story. If I haven't worked on integrating it within myself, reminding myself again and again on why it is important for me personally, it doesn't stay for a long time. It stays for a few days and then it falls back. Yes?
It takes 21 days actually to change a habit.
21 days?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, we stop. We're actually, we are sort of done with the talk. Yeah, okay. We have our cameraman who wants to change the cassette. But I think we can just discuss and then we will wind up with some meditation. You said it takes 21 days?
I've heard that. And some research if you work on it.
Yeah. It's very interesting because in my own life, I have worked very frequently with these 21 days framework. Mm-hmm. It's, I don't know if you need, why can it not be 21 and a half days or 19 point, I don't know, but it's. I think it's more a sort of a goal you set for yourself and you work towards that. It helps in many ways. To begin with, I would say with this nonviolence, work on this process of identification, integration, going into silence, having active contemplation. Don't bother changing anything in your life. Just work on this process for 1 week. Do it seriously. See what you feel. Are we on? Yeah, okay. So experiment with this, and that's the only way, I think, that we can sort of move ahead. Otherwise, many a times, we know what we need to change, we want to change it, we keep slipping back. If you're really serious, then we need to give ourselves that time, half an hour every day, as I said, 20 minutes for the practice of yoga, 10 minutes for this active contemplation, bringing it into your awareness and working with it, going deeper and deeper into the experience. See how it works. And you can actually work with any value like that, love. You can work with that. Purity, if you want to work with it, you can work with that. Honesty, if you want to work with it, you can work with that. Any value that you believe in, but you're not able to live, bring it into your awareness. Use the same process. Balance between this deep experience of loving silence, not just empty silence. Loving silence, silence that is full of the love of God. Have that experience. Active contemplation. loving silence, active contemplation, work with this for 21 days, as Yasmin mentioned, maybe, and you see the value starts becoming a part, it starts getting integrated within the self, it becomes synthesized with the self. And you will also observe when you're engaged in this process, desire, temptation goes down. Pay attention to that. I've seen that. When I'm engaged in this process of integrating values within myself, I get the power to overcome temptation and desire. It's a beautiful experience. Because your gratification, satisfaction is coming from a very deep source. And therefore you don't need something from the, you know, have Nutella to feel good. No, you don't need that. You can overcome. And I've seen when I practice meditation, just like that, without bothering to engage in active contemplation, I want to have Nutella a little more. It's like, you know, I've always seen that happening. Because the inner sense of satisfaction and attainment is not there. I want something sweet, I want something creamy, or something else that I can feel good about. I work in the deep process, I overcome that. But you know, this is something you have to experience for yourself.
Could be okay if it's intentional Nutella.
Intentional Nutella with lots of sugar in it. I don't think so. Okay. Yes. But you know, what we can do now? I think we've sort of finished the talk. We will continue the discussion. Please clap. The reason I ask for that is because Robert wants to take a view from here and I don't want to interrupt. So Robert, now you're free, the talk is over, they have clapped, you can come here. Yes. So, but yes, sorry, you were saying something?
I was just wondering, when you said that the experience that you had during the meditation and the pain that you felt, what do you do with the pain?
Yeah, so now
how do you use it in a good way?
Yeah, how do you use it in a good way? That's very important. I think that's a wonderful question. How do you, when you feel, do you work, do you let yourself feel the pain and then feel, oh, I'm feeling the pain and therefore I am becoming clean, right? What I worked with was, you feel the pain and you recognize that there's something you have gone against and that is creating this pain. But just feeling the pain is not enough for the healing. You have to be positive. You have to move into a powerful space. And for me, that powerful space was sending that animal being to whom I had caused suffering, that soul, because the animal has a soul, sending that soul vibrations of peace, love, purity. In that way, asking for forgiveness. So I've caused you pain. And there's nothing, I cannot take it back. But if I give you the experience of love that I have experienced from God, if I can give you that experience, then perhaps I will be forgiven. That's the way I would work. And I practice with that a lot. There are many people in our lives that we sometimes give sorrow to, sometimes unintentionally, sometimes we don't know we have done it. But one of the practices in meditation also is for a few minutes, not for too much, just for a few minutes, maybe at the end of your meditation, You immerse all the souls who have had any exchange with you. And you give them actively the experience of love and peace. You wish them well. You immerse feelings of purity and good wishes for them. If they start experiencing this, then I will be forgiven. So people say, how do you work with forgiveness? It's a very active, constructive process. It's not asking people for forgiveness. It's giving them something that they need. And so we say meditation works in that way very, very naturally when we place ourselves in the light of God, in that deep silence. Automatically, we are spreading vibrations of peace, happiness and love. These vibrations are reaching out to the souls of the world naturally. And in these souls are also those souls to whom I've given sorrow. Now they are getting the vibrations of love and strength and power and peace from me. And therefore, my accounts of karma are getting cancelled. And this is purification. People ask, whatever you've done in the past, you've done all sorts of nasty things and you sit and meditate and you become pure. How is that possible? this is the way it is possible. It's not just, you know, it's not an egocentric process that I'm becoming clean, all my sins are being forgiven because I'm meditating. No. Because in accurate meditation, what is happening is, when I place myself as a soul in the light of God, the light of God, God is not restricted to me. It is spreading out from me. It is not a physical process, it is non-physical. Space is not limiting those vibrations. They are reaching out to the whole world. They are reaching out to the souls of the whole world. And these souls are now getting the gift of peace and happiness and love from me. And that is cleansing me. That is burning away the karma and the baggage of the past. That is the process of forgiveness. That's the constructive way. Anytime such memory emerges, that's what I would work with. Emerge that soul, give that soul a lot of love. Animal soul, human soul, doesn't matter. Give them that experience of love. Which of course doesn't mean that I keep causing injury and then meditating to overcome the injury. Then I'm just repeating, I'm deepening this experience, right? That's not a very pleasant experience. Yes, Robert, are we done? I can't look back at him because I have to pretend that I'm speaking to you. But look back at him.
Maybe a clap.
Another clap. Okay. Settle down. I move away from all thoughts of this external physical reality. Beginning my inner journey, I travel deep within to the center of my being, to the center of my existence. Experiencing my entire existence concentrated. It is as though this physical body has disappeared. This physical world has disappeared from my awareness. All that remains is the spirit. Resting in the light of the Supreme. Deep silence, I experience the light of God.
falling upon me, going deep into me, and spreading out from me, reaching out to all the souls of the world. Spreading the light of peace. I see a multitude of other souls, sparkling beings of light, and I feel God entering me, flowing out from me, touching the hearts of all these souls. Giving this awareness of my eternal connectedness with the universe, with all other conscient beings, and my eternal relatedness with God. I allow myself to gently return back to this physical costume of the body, seated in the center of the brain once again, looking out through the windows of these eyes, listening through these ears. I, the eternal spirit within, the being of life, the being of peace. Peace, my original nature. Peace, my only religion.